It's Monday, and the place to watch the football game is Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch. $5 personal one-topping pizzas and $4 drink specials. You gotta hang now with Cofield & Company at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go on a Monday. Monday Night Football on the way. You heard it. Pizza Rock is the location. Jets and Browns should be an interesting game. The Browns have everything laid out in front of them. Looks like what should be an easy win against the beat-up Jets. And now the division is wide open with the news that Big Ben Roethlisberger, as many people like to call him, Roethlisberger, is down for the season. We'll get to that. We'll get to the Drew Brees injury. Plenty of recap of yesterday's action as well. More great work from the NFL officials. So much to get to here as we hand it off in the 4 o'clock hour to Monday Night Football. Come on down here. We got a great party going down with tons of prizes. And right now at 3 on, 4 o'clock is – 4 o'clock. $4 is where the food and drink starts. Adam Hill is here. It's Cofield, Angel. We got Ari back on the board. Let's get to it.
It's time for the 3. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
How are you, my friend?
Good.
Amazingly, we're going to actually open up with a bit of WNBA, even though we've got all the NFL, just because yesterday was a crazy scenario with the Aces in the playoffs at the Thomas and Mack. First of all, a nice crowd that showed up. That was impressive on a Sunday afternoon against the NFL, against VGK.
And NASCAR in town. I mean, it was
a good point.
Wild sports day, no question about it. And, a playoff game brought out the crowd, and good for them. And somehow the Aces find a way to win despite trying their best to lose.
And what does that mean? I saw everyone patting the Aces on the back for an unbelievable end-of-the-game shot. And you know what's funny? I saw the shot. I was like, wow, that's really cool. Boy, what a heartbreaker for the opposition. And then you sent over a note, and I was like, wait, that was a bad shot? And then I hadn't noticed on all the little videos I watched the time.
Yeah.
So set up the scenario. The Aces pulled off an amazing comeback. They were down 90-85 in the waning moments of the game, and they hit a bomb, you know, and it's been deemed game winner. But the time of it is fascinating. It may be the lowest IQ basketball shot of 2019, but they got away with it.
And shouldn't have counted. But we'll get into that also. So end of the game, as you mentioned, they make a little bit of a comeback. The Aces are then down. They're down two. They have the ball. They try to get to Asia Wilson. She goes to the basket. It's knocked away by Courtney Vandersloot, one of the best players in the league. Knocked right off of Asia Wilson and out of bounds. And for all intents and purposes, looks like Chicago has won the game. Now, they get the ball. For whatever reason, Vandersloot is dribbling out the clock, and instead of accepting a foul or just continuing to dribble,
she
tries to throw a pass up the floor for some reason, yeah, which I'll never understand. D'Erica Hamby gets the ball around midcourt with 9 seconds left and throws it up as if there's 1 second remaining. I will never for the life of me understand why, what she was thinking, what she was doing. She gets the steal,
She
steps out of bounds, and then shoots the ball.
Oh, she was out of bounds, too.
Oh, wait. Nobody saw it.
Really?
They just let it go. It was...
Yeah, I was amazed by the shot, and then when I was watching it again today, because I'm thinking, oh, the Aces, dramatic victory here at the buzzer. I mean, what a freaking... What's her name? Vandersloot? What a mistake by her. Aces, Johnny on the spot, make the shot, and then I'm watching. I'm like, wait, did she make the shot with 4.8 seconds left?
Yeah.
Like from 5 feet inside of half court? What the hell is she doing?
With a teammate wide open underneath
the
basket?
There was someone wide open for a layup underneath.
What is going on?
But they got it.
I guess
they got it.
She just had that confidence that shot was going in.
What do you think Lambeer tells them in the locker room? Does he hold back any of this stuff? Or does he wait until today to show on film, like, next time we get in this situation, like, great steal, wonderful work on the full court pressure, but you got to know time and place and clock.
Well,
you can't be chucking up a shot with 6 seconds left in the game.
Sure, but the way they executed in the half-court offense, maybe that's their best shot.
Yeah.
Like, just throw it up from half-court. Why don't you do that more often? It was listen, I guess we're kind of raining on the parade of what was a ridiculously amazing, fun finish. But, yes, that's not how you're supposed to play out the end of the game on any level. But it makes it more fun. I think if they just win a playoff game yesterday at home, nobody really cares. It's not the number one play on SportsCenter. It's not leading our show. It was an insane way to end a basketball game. It was crazy. And for all intents and purposes, Asia Wilson's turnover should have ended the season. And for some reason, Chicago didn't allow it.
Listen to the end of the game here.
Vandersloot looks at the clock, daring them to Fowler. That's a dangerous pass. Hamby.
Hell of a crowd reaction and hit, what, about a 32-footer with 4.8 seconds left on the clock. Pretty amazing. It happens, man. People, we've seen it. We've seen it in UNLV basketball. Who was it? Now I'm blanking on his name. I don't know. I'll pick it up here in a second. But I remember the same thing happening. I think it was Menzies' first year. And one of the forwards came across and had plenty of time and freaking chucked it up with like 5 seconds left. Just in a complete panic.
Yeah, listen, and you said 4.8 seconds. If you didn't watch it, let's be clear. It's not 4.8 when she shot it.
Right.
It's 4.8 when it went in. There was like more than 7 seconds left when she put the shot up in the air. Crazy. But it was just one of those things. She didn't have time to look at the clock. I'm sure she panicked that there was only, you know, 1 or 2 seconds left in a scramble situation. It was insane. Completely insane. But good for them. And now they get to go on and most likely lose in the next round, but it's at least they're playing. This is where they were supposed to be going into the season. And you know, they've got a chance to extend the season now, which is exciting.
Tyrell Green was the player.
Wow.
One of the gritty forwards who had more than a few good games for that Menzies team that struggled most of the season. So speaking of struggling, I'm not happy that Big Ben got hurt, but this was one of the factors when I was picking before the NFL season and pointing out the teams that may underachieve. When you've got 37, 38, 39, 40-year-old quarterbacks, we'll get to the amazing Tom Brady, because this never seemed to happen to him outside of the year that he tore his ACL, which seems like a long time ago, and it was. But Big Ben comes out of the game, elbow injury. They go on to lose the game, and we find out this morning that it's not just a minor elbow injury. Surgery is needed. Roethlisberger out for the year, and now we don't know what we have with the Steelers. We'll get to, in the 4 o'clock hour, the future of both the Steelers and the Saints, because Breeze is supposedly out 6 weeks, but this is just devastating. All that celebration, all that addition by subtraction, all that, hey, we're going to keep our guy, Roethlisberger, screw the two low-character guys. And now Roethlisberger, 37, down for the season, and maybe done for his career.
Yeah, I think it's more than a 50% chance that he's thrown his last pass for the Steelers. And would that mean that he never throws a pass for anybody? I don't know. I think it's possible that he would go somewhere else. I think in the ideal world for the Steelers, Mason Rudolph is good. Or at least good enough to move forward and say, okay, we're fine, we don't need this. And on the other side, I don't think that they're necessarily like clamoring to get Roethlisberger back. And I don't know, Roethlisberger's talked about retiring so often.
Yeah.
Now he's got a long rehab ahead of him and potentially a bad team to come back to. Like, I don't think it's as bad as, you know, some people are letting it on today, but potentially a bad team to come back to. And then at that point, why? Yeah.
Interesting too. The AFC picture. Now you've had Pittsburgh essentially knocked down at least two or three games. They were expected to win somewhere around 8, 9, maybe 10 max. So they may be out of it. The Jets, I think, were a long shot to get to like 8 or 9. Who knows if Darnold's out for 5 weeks, how many of these games they can win, including tonight's game. So the AFC picture becoming very much more Chiefs and Patriots and maybe Ravens and Chargers. We'll get to what happened with those teams yesterday. Again, we're not going to knee-jerk after all of these Raider games, but we didn't go crazy after the first victory. We both think the Broncos stink. Yesterday was rough because you were there. They got off to a great start. What was the crowd like when they got off to that 10-0 start?
I think, like, cautiously optimistic. I mean, they were certainly like rambunctious and crazy and into it and thinking, hey, this could be the day. It's 10-0. The offense is clicking on all cylinders for the first two drives. The defense got a couple of stops, and it was pretty loud in there. And I think people were I think there was a thought for about a quarter yesterday that maybe yesterday wasn't – or excuse me, maybe last week wasn't a total fluke. Maybe – yeah, Denver's not that good, but, hey, maybe the Raiders are a lot better than people expected. Maybe they can get through this opening seven-game gauntlet with, like, three wins, four wins. And then who knows, because you got winnable games on the back half of the schedule. And then I think all of that came crashing down in 15 minutes.
What was the worst part of the game for the Raiders? The inability to stop the big play, which it seemed like every Kansas City touchdown was a massive gain. And, hell, they had like a 72-yarder that got called back. Or the offensive mistakes, especially the interceptions thrown by Derek Carr. Was that Carr's fault on the interceptions? What was worse, the big plays against the defense or Carr with the mistakes?
Yeah, I don't know that it's fully Carr on the mistakes. Ryan Grant was a disaster yesterday. A lot of those plays were centered around him. A lot of the bad offensive plays, and I think that offensive pass interference, weird pick play, which it was two guys running into each other, and then Grant looked like he thought he was supposed to block instead of trying to catch a pass, but he also was just kind of avoiding contact by putting his hands up. It was a whole weird thing. And then the ball ended up being intercepted. They called offensive pass interference. It really set Carr off. I don't think that was his fault. The Tyrell Williams play was really just a miscommunication at the line of scrimmage. He audibled out. He audibled out of a running play. Basically was trying to tell Tyrell Williams, hey, I'm just going to throw it up. And Tyrell really didn't get the message. So that was just a miscommunication between them on that play. So I think that's troubling, and you don't want to have those things happen, especially in week two. I think the fact that there's no second receiver right now is a huge problem. A really huge problem for the Raiders.
And they still got the ball from time to time to Tyrell Williams. But, I mean, how much longer is that going to last?
I don't know. And Waller has certainly stepped up as a good threat at tight end, but you've got to have another threat at wide receiver. Obviously, Antonio Brown was supposed to be that guy, and Tyrell was supposed to be number two, but that's not how things worked out. That is a real problem for the offense right now. The offensive line wasn't as good as it was last week. That's a problem. Trent Brown potentially being injured yesterday is a huge problem. But the defense, especially in the secondary with the communication, that is a real, real problem that they've got to get fixed, because there was a couple of plays where they're at the line of scrimmage, you know, one play in particular where LaMarcus Joyner was pointing out, he's like, all right, the running back's in motion, I got him. He goes to cover him in the flat, and then nobody picks up the slot receiver at all and just runs straight down the field for an easy touchdown. You can't do that against anybody, but you certainly can't do it against the Chiefs. And they took advantage of it, and it happened more than once. That's a problem that can't continue.
More on the Raiders' 28-10 loss to the Chiefs as they come crashing down after a really quick start. And we'll take a look at the division as the Chargers fall apart because of special teams. And what a freaking nightmare for the Denver Broncos. Not that we dislike it, because I don't think either one of us is real high on the Broncos or rooting for the Broncos, but that was a rough one for Denver.
The 3 is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
Mahomes throwing left wide open to Marcus Robinson. Inside the 5. Touchdown! Kansas City! DeMarcus Robinson runs free. Remember, he had the 89-yard touchdown a year ago against these guys. He gives adrenaline to the whole Chiefs kingdom with a 44-yard bomb from Mahomes.
Chiefs Radio Network on the call there. He always gets very excited. First of all, DeMarcus Robinson, who? It was like the greatest day of his career. Obviously,
Tyreek Hill, who?
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't had a ton of playing time because they've had great receivers. But, like, if the Raiders' backups can't step up, you see what the Chiefs' backups are doing. Now, Derek Carr is not as good as Pat Mahomes. But that was not purely a Mahomes play, right?
No, that was just wide open.
That's pitch and catch.
Anybody scoring on that play in the National Football League, you can't let a slot receiver just run free down the field, have nobody pick him up. And that was the play I referenced earlier. That's just a horrific miscommunication by the secondary. When you've got, you know, LaMarcus Joyner was lined up on him, but when the running back came in motion, he stops, he turns, he looks at the rest of the defense, and he signals something. And you can tell he's saying, I've got the running back, somebody's got to pick up this guy. Nobody did. And I don't think LaMarcus Joyner is – I just assume, based on what I know about him, what the coaches think about him, what everybody says about him, I don't think he was at fault. I think he did the right thing. It was somebody else has to be the one to pick it up and say, oh, he's telling me to get this assignment. He's not going to say that afterwards. You know, he took responsibility and just said, you know, that's I've got to be better. It's got to you know, it's got to come from me and everything else. He said the right things, but he was really, really frustrated in the locker room. He was a guy that kind of just sat in the corner with his head down for the first, you know, 10, 15 minutes of the time the media was allowed in there, and then he answered questions later. But he was really devastated after the game, and he didn't have a great game. He also had a defensive pass interference penalty, but the secondary as a whole was struggling. Obviously, with no Jonathan Abram, that's difficult. It's tough to be a man down, especially a guy that you're going to count on so much to be on the field for so many plays and be a part of so many different calls defensively. But you've got to have guys pick up the slack for him. He's not going to be there for the entire year. And certainly you don't want to try to learn on the fly against the Chiefs. That's the wrong opponent to try to figure that out. But they've got to get that cleaned up very quickly.
Here's the touchdown pass from Mahomes to Travis Kelce.
Pressure, floating a pass, Kelce near side, over the shoulder, makes the catch in traffic, touchdown, Kansas City, Mahomes, his third touchdown pass.
My God, I like that KC announcer, but if you're a Raiders fan, you just want to punch him right in the face. The enthusiasm, as you're just getting freaking lit up. Ugh.
Well, I left the stadium like after 10 last night and was driving, and I was listening to the replay of the game on the Raider station up there, and early in the game it was just so amazing, the excitement, and then all of a sudden there's nothing the rest of the game wore off.
Well, offensively there really was nothing. Our vast sound department was going through the game and they were telling me that just trying to pick out some big plays from the Raiders. Obviously there was the 51-yard run by Josh Jacobs, you know, there was the touchdown to Williams, but there weren't like a ton of gigantic plays throughout the game. And meanwhile, the Chiefs were, it seemed like every play was 25, 40, 55, 72 that got called back.
Well, I mean, all of their points came in the second quarter. And it seemed like all the big plays were stacked on each other because they were in that one quarter.
It seemed like it because they were.
They had back-to-back drives of like 95 and 94 yards that took no time. They just went right down the field. It was watching that quarter was, I mean, it was classic Kansas City. It's just what they do. It's what they are with Mahomes.
Yep.
But you know, the Raiders, I guess you could look at the rest of the game and say, well, I guess they stopped the run. There are some things they probably like defensively.
I mean, it's the best or second best team in football. They're going to be tough to stop, and you're right. They had three good quarters against them defensively, but that second quarter just spelled doom, and then the Raiders couldn't do anything after a good first 8 minutes or so. What's worse, losing 28-10 against one of the best teams in football, or losing to Mitch Trubisky because your quarterback was awful throughout the game? You actually achieved at the end of the game. You called a ballsy play to take the freaking lead, which was amazing. And then you go back on defense. There's the roughing call. We're talking about the Broncos. The roughing call, which keeps the drive alive, right? Trubisky gets landed on. It's that very controversial you know, you can't lay your weight all over the quarterback. We'll get to the officiating part of it, but as you're watching the game, there's just no way that Trubisky is going to get anything done on this fourth down play, and he does it.
Four-man rush, snap back Trubisky. Protection holds. He's scanning. He's looking. He's running. He throws. Open cut, 35-yard line. Timeout, Bears. Where's the clock at?
0-0-0. No time.
Dang it. I couldn't see the clock.
Hold on.
Right now, it's at the 35-yard line of Denver. Is there time left? It took a lot of time for Mitch.
He may have called it. Matt saying he called the timeout.
Well, they got it. They got it. 1 second left to hear Jeff Joniak on the Bears radio network with the, damn it! I mean, that is an absolute miracle. Then they tried out Eddie Pinheiro, and consider all of the kicking woes that the Bears had last season. For a guy to freaking bang it from 50-plus was amazing.
Boot by Eddie Pinheiro. Kick to the uprights. Then the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with a narrow kick to send Denver down as time expires. Bears 16, Denver 14. They escape with a victory on the road. Rarely done here in Denver in the first 2 weeks of the season. Bears are 1-1.
They are 1-1. And the Broncos have lots of problems that we can talk about. Lots of problems. It's one of the rare games, like, if you were doing power ratings, I actually think you would come out of it and go, you know what, I'm downgrading both the Bears and the Broncos.
That is a lot of excitement for a 1-1 team when I don't know how much further they're going to go. But, yeah, credit to them and the way that it goes down, because as you mentioned, this is a team who has had a ton of question marks about their kicking game. And can they find somebody to kick? They finally seem to have solved it, at least for now, because Pinheiro bangs that one in under the most, you know, pressure-packed situation you could imagine on the road in Denver, helped by the altitude, but great kick by him.
It's time to hit What's Trending, brought to you by the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Monday Night Football is out of the way. The Jets, 6.5-point underdogs at home against the Cleveland Browns. No C.J. Mosley or Quinnen Williams for New York. Cleveland without free safety Demaryius Randle. The game right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Pregame starts at 4:30. After a 30-14 loss at Northwestern, UNLV football has a bye week. Next up is Wyoming in Laramie. Announced today, the game will be televised. September 28th kickoff is at 5 p.m. or Eastern time, right? 5 p.m. Pacific time, and it'll be on ESPNU.
Hang with Steve and Adam tonight for Monday Night Football at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
Three-man rush for Detroit. Rivers, long look into the end zone. It is intercepted by the Lions. Intercepted by Darius Slay. He's got it. Picked it off in the end zone. Oh, Darius, young man, you did it again. You did it again.
Yes, sir. Oh, baby, stand up, everybody.
Monday Night Football is coming, and Cofield & Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
Yeah, we'll get to the other disaster in the AFC West, because the Raiders lose it against the king of the division, the Chiefs. Chargers, ugh, that was awful. Special teams problems, and then and we'll get to what Rivers did on that final play there that was intercepted by Darius Slay. Too much excitement from the Lions Radio Network? I actually thought that was a great call.
Yeah.
It's fun when the Bears and Lions win. Their announcers get fired up.
I don't think excitement is bad. It's just fun to me, especially when it's early excitement that comes out to backfire later.
Let's get to a few more things in that Broncos game. Am I right? Are you still wanting to downgrade both teams?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But I can't go much lower on the Bears. I mean,
I don't think I can go much lower on the Broncos.
Yeah, they're awful. They're horrific.
I don't know what people were seeing with the Broncos. I thought that was a dead under. I didn't think they had any chance of winning 8 or 9 games. And, yeah, their defense is pretty solid, but we talked about John Elway. He doesn't know what he's doing. He really doesn't. It's amazing. The guy has actually done a good job of collecting defensive talent. He has no idea what to do at his own position. We both ripped the Joe Flacco pickup. The guy's making $20 million a year. Who wanted him? And that's the guy who's going to be your bridge? Meanwhile, freaking Tyrod Taylor is available? What's the point? And he has been awful. Now, he's been okay in spots. Well, I mean, I'll say this. The interception he threw near the goal line was dreadful. Emmanuel Sanders is open. You just got to deliver the ball to the breadbasket. He throws it like 4 feet over his head. What in God's name are you doing? Now, I guess give him credit. You know what? He got the winning touchdown. Should have been. He got the 2-point conversion. But you can't make up for the rest of the game. I mean, you're talking about 3.5 quarters of just inept offense. And the guy essentially is like he's like a 5.5 yard per attempt dude now.
Yeah.
You can't win in the NFL like that.
No. It's bad, and it doesn't make sense for their team to have him as their quarterback. It doesn't make sense on any level, but it's what John Elway has done. But we have talked in the past about guys who are great at something. Like, Jordan is a terrible basketball executive. He's awful. And Elway doesn't seem to know how to evaluate quarterbacks. I think there's something to being great at something and not necessarily being able to understand what makes somebody else great at that thing. And we talk about this with jockocracy all the time, of just because a guy was good at as a player doesn't mean he's going to be great as an analyst or as a broadcaster or as a front office guy. It doesn't translate. It's not the same skill. And Elway has a huge blind spot for quarterbacks. He just does.
He's blown it on Flacco. And here, the worst part is, I mean, I don't think Drew Lock is going to be ready. So they don't even have a guy who's ready and waiting until probably like week 10.
They need to get Chad Kelly and Paxton Lynch back. Just throw somebody out there.
Man, that was bad. That was real bad.
But there's like no promise either. Nah. Like, what are they looking forward to?
I'll tell you what, it's going to be really interesting as teams get out to like 1-5 starts, you know, 2-6 starts, who really starts playing for these quarterbacks in the draft, and especially teams that already have quarterbacks. Like, I'm starting to think what the Cardinals did last year with Kyler Murray a year after making a top 15 pick with Josh Rosen is not going to be that abnormal, where teams are like, all right, these guys are so good, I don't care if we took a guy last year in the third round, we got to move on this. The Chargers, that one was horrendous as well, because the Chargers defense did a beautiful job for much of the game, and that's a beat-up defense. I thought their defense was not going to be effective against the Lions. The offense moved the ball up and down the field, but they kept stalling out. And, you know, I got to look back on all the play calling. I don't think it was aggressive enough. I don't think, man, Anthony Lynn should have learned his lesson from 2 years ago. You remember? Cool! Remember what a disaster Younghoe Koo was at the beginning of the season?
I love Younghoe.
Bro, you don't have Badgley. Your punter is kicking. He stinks.
It hasn't been good.
You can't settle for 39 and 41 yarders. And he missed both. And then the Chargers get in a position. I mean, at the end of the game, you're not kicking a field goal. That ain't going to happen.
Yeah. And then they got over-aggressive because because most teams would be in that position and say, all right, let's at least get the three. But they don't have that option because they don't have a safe – you know, it's not a safe option to kick the field goal there, and then you have to try to force it to the end zone, and Slay makes a great play.
It wasn't a great pass by Rivers because he kind of telegraphed it, didn't look off the safety. He had someone coming free over the middle.
It was Virgil Green.
And, I mean, he loves Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
But it was just too much of a jump ball, and, you know, you got safety help on it, and Slay made the interception. I actually walked away from the game, and I was like, I'd actually rather see that. At least they tried, and it's their guy, than to miss a freaking 50-yarder.
Yeah.
To give that guy another chance at some sort of field goal, forget about it.
Yeah. I mean, they're as you said, they're trying to be aggressive. They're trying to not leave it on the leg of the punter field goal kicker because it's not a high-percentage play in that situation to have him trot out there and try another one. And you can't go into a game with a guy that you don't trust either.
Yeah. You weren't able to bet yesterday, right?
No.
What a nightmare.
I know.
I mean, you're working games, so you're not going to be betting anyway, but
I will say
freaking disaster being out of the state. I hate it. I hate it. I was actually...
Me too.
In the afternoon, I was watching the games at a bar, and it was like a fortress. Like, there's just some places in town, you're like, what's going on? Nothing works
no
on
service.
The phone. Yeah. So finally, I got hooked. I asked, you know, not that hard to ask, but I asked, hey, you know, can I get the Wi-Fi code? And they were like, okay, here you go. And then I was like, I'm back, baby. And, like, all I'm doing now is in-game, right? So Chargers go down, plus 140 pops up for the win. I'm like, all right, I'll roll with that. Obviously, I didn't get that. Sunday Night Football, this was not a great bet, and it is incredibly lucky that I got it. As soon as I see Wentz go in to, you know, the freaking concussion check,
yeah,
I'm like, that's it, I'm going Falcons. Now the line I got was terrible. Again, this is why if you I mean, I guess it's situational. It certainly worked. I did the same exact thing with the Jax week one with Foles. As soon as I saw him down, I'm like, okay, let's go lay the points with Kansas City. I laid 3.5
ooh
with the Falcons, which is a terrible number considering the opening number, and then the end of the game. How ridiculous was that? Here's a great thing. Nelson Agholor makes the big catch to keep them alive, but the drop he had before that was the game winner. What was he doing? It was like he was so cavalier trying to put his hands out for the ball. That was a touchdown.
Should have
been 24-20.
Yeah, should have been. They weren't able to make the plays, and obviously that was a big one. They weren't able to make plays, and Julio Jones did just make a play on his own. Which essentially was, I mean, it was a good call, but very well designed, really well blocked. But Julio went and made a play, and
yeah,
Agholor didn't. And that was the difference in the game. And that's sometimes why, you know, those kind of players are so important to have on your team that are going to make the play when you need it.
And I didn't think Wentz or Ryan were very good at times. Boy, I tell you, Ryan throws.
Falcons still can't block.
Ryan throws. Well, maybe that's why. He has to throw a lot of jump balls.
Yeah, there's no time.
He's under pressure. He's just like, you know what? I got good receivers. The hell with it. If I think I got one-on-one, even in the middle of the field. I mean, that's how he got intercepted at least once in the middle of the field on a jump ball, like 30 yards downfield. He's like, the hell with it. I'm not gonna get broken in half here. I'll take the chance.
I think we can assemble a better offensive line here at Pizza Rock than they have.
Do we get on Wentz even after he gets checked for a concussion? Or at that point, you got to give him a break?
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think you have to give him a break necessarily if there was nothing there.
Yeah.
They checked it, and he was fine, so he went forward. But, you can't really have a minor – I mean, I guess you can have a more minor than other times concussion. I don't know how much the levels are there.
But here's my point on that. When a guy – because everyone's now stuck on – well, one, a lot of people for some reason have this Dak v. Wentz comparison because Wentz got his payday, Dak hasn't. So there are a lot of people who were like, if you're making $32 million a year, you got to win that game. Like, he was potentially concussed or dinged up. And every quarter – and Dak hasn't been – I mean, he's been unbelievable so far. I know you have to consider competition,
they've played two of the worst defenses.
But he's been unreal. He doesn't have his money. And Wentz does. All right, we got to get to what's going on with Antonio Brown. There's more breaking news today. We'll get to what, my God, the Dolphins and the Patriots. That was amazing. NFL Talk brought to you today by our friends at Nova Home Loans, specifically Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. 577-2600 is the number. You can call up. You can get a $500 coupon towards your appraisal on any purchase or refi. And the mortgage tune-up is really what you want to do. Then you're going to find out what the situation is with your house, with your payment, with your rates, if you got money and equity in the house that you can pull out. Dustin can do all that for you, and he'll also tell you, you know what, you're fine. You got the best situation possible. Don't try to pull any money out. Call Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans, 577-2600.
Prices plus food and drink specials starting at $4. It's Pizza Rock for Monday Night Football inside Green Valley Ranch.
Down the right side of the ball is tipped and then intercepted. And the safety comes up with a theft, his second of the season. Devin McCourty off the deflection by Stephon Gilmore, and the Patriots have it at Miami's 35. Third and two, rolling right, and he throws in traffic, intercepted, picked off by Gilmore, who is gone. Right down the middle, 25-20, goodbye to the end zone. Touchdown, Patriots!
It's Monday, and the place to watch the football game is Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch. Now, back to Cofield and Company.
I mean, that was Alabama FCS team, right? I mean, that bad. My God. And I may be the only person in the world who is still like, hey, the Dolphins are going to win some games. But after watching that, I don't know what the hell is going on.
Mission accomplished.
Believe it or not, I know that's the goal. 2 weeks in a row, once the Dolphins have been just getting annihilated, I'm like, of course they're going to score a touchdown or get a field goal here. Nothing. And then just, I mean, this may, I don't like to overreact, right? I don't. But did Vinatieri retire today?
No.
Do we have anything yet on this?
You got a vote of confidence from Frank
Reich.
Okay,
so Vinatieri was so pissed off yesterday. He said something after the game to one of the reporters, which seemed to suggest, hey, you know what? I'm walking away tomorrow. That's how bad this is.
He told the reporter, I'll see you tomorrow. And the reporter said, you guys don't practice tomorrow. He said, oh, you'll hear from me tomorrow.
Ryan Fitzpatrick was so bad. I mean, he had to be thinking last night, what am I doing? I mean, he's going to collect the money, but that was horrendous. Believe me, the receivers oftentimes didn't help him out. Your guy, the running back, Ballage, was a freaking nightmare.
Not my guy. I drafted him because Kenyon Drake is too good.
Right. You think Drake is going to get dealt.
Kenyon Drake is too good for this team. That's why they won't give him the ball. Kalen Ballage executed perfectly yesterday. Once they threw it to him out of the backfield, he ducked under the pass, which was amazing.
I mean, he's not doing it on purpose, But the optics of that with a team that is clearly tanking yes. is real. Brian Flores is not telling Balazs to duck.
But you're happy about it.
You're watching like, what? Why is he ducking?
So that wasn't enough because he ducked and nothing bad happened. It was just an incomplete pass. So later in the game, he's like, oh, you know what I'll do? I'll pop it up in the air and hand it to Jamie Collins for a pick six. That's what I'll do.
Oh, God.
Which worked out well, too.
You hear the call on the Patriots Radio Network and stupid Scott Zolak just cackling the whole game, just enjoying himself so much. You know what I was fascinated by? Because the other thing is, because Sharps over the weekend were on the Dolphins. It's just what Sharps do. They're going to take the 18.5. And you can laugh at them, but in the long run, it generally pays off. The amazing thing was the Pats were up big. And Brady is still being trotted out there. I swear I looked up at like 5:21 left in the game. He's going out again.
Yeah. Well, my take on that yesterday was that he wasn't very good. And I think they wanted to give him some work because he didn't look good yesterday. I thought he had a pretty bad game, actually. And I think they wanted to keep trying him out there and say, hey, let's see if he can get some confidence coming out of this. Because there wasn't a whole lot to build on the offense. The defense was just so bad of the Dolphins, and the Dolphins' offense was giving the Patriots points too, which was insane. But they're doing everything right in Miami. It's a perfect season so far for the Dolphins. I'm very impressed. The crazy part is all these people that have survivor leagues and survivor pools, it's going to ruin them. Because everyone is just going to pick against them every week. Like
It's going to ruin the survivor pool?
Yeah.
So you're going to have like 4,000 people out of like 4,300 left at the end of the season?
Yeah, because everybody is just going to go against the Dolphins. Well, you can't because the three times they'll have rematches where you won't be able to pick them. Luckily, I saved New England. I didn't use them in week one. Or I didn't use them yesterday. So, but yeah, that's what it's going to be. If the Dolphins ever win, because I don't think that, I can't imagine how they would. It's just going to be everybody picking against them every week.
There's going to be 95% of folks alive in survivor pools, or 99% will go out in one particular week.
Yeah.
Because if the Dolphins ever win a game, everyone that week is out.
Everyone's out. Although I'm in one yesterday where somebody picked Atlanta, and I was like, what are you doing?
What do you mean? They were right.
That's fine.
They were right.
That's fine. It was crazy.
Yeah. No AB yesterday after the game. So you first see that, and you're like, oh, unbelievable. He doesn't get it, man. He's just skipping out on the media. You know the Patriots told him, bro, you can't talk to the media. I mean, they're going to have to pay a fine. I wouldn't let him talk to the media either. He's a dimwit. I mean, what's he going to say? Whatever he says is going to screw things up more.
Or, no, I don't know if that's true. Because
really?
Yeah, because he is very well-versed. It's only five times or whatever that I was around him for these sessions. He says nothing. Like, he knows what he's doing. It was the one time was in the midst of the helmet thing, and like every question was like, you know, have you found a helmet that you want to use yet? And he'd just say, I'm just out here doing whatever I can to help out my teammates, and whatever that means, that's what I'll do. Like that's what he does. So I think he knows how to handle. Well, media settings if he has to get in one.
But you also have a situation where you've got some Patriot beat writers who get stonewalled by Belichick every week, and they might be going in there with, ready to chomp away
the vendetta
at AB. So here's the deal with AB. Keep in mind what I just said there. The first accuser was scheduled to speak to the NFL today. There is now a second accuser who is saying that AB was inappropriate with her, too.
Yeah. She's an artist. She was hired to do work at AB's house. She said she's very used to being hired by guys that will just try to make advances at her, so she gets it. She understands the scenario. But she said while she was painting at the house, he just kind of approached her naked, stood behind her, and was just having a conversation with her, and she understood it to be, okay, I know what he's trying for here. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to paint. And seems that, you know, she went about her business and never really said anything except for now that it's, you know, kind of in the spotlight. She's like, yeah, this is kind of what he does. Hearing the other accuser's tale.
Oh, no.
She came out and just said it. So,
did you make a Louis C.K. reference last week in relation to Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we going to have like 5, 6, 10 more of these weird deals where someone is saying, hey, the guy's just walking up on me naked?
Maybe. Maybe it's his thing.
Well, it's not a good thing.
It's a thing.
It's not a good thing. And it's an impossible situation for the NFL and the Patriots. I saw McKinnell, who of course does the show over on 920 The Game at 2 o'clock every day, and fills in with us. He said the Pats need to make a move on Antonio Brown, which I responded with, didn't you say the Chiefs needed to make a move with Tyreek Hill over the summer? This is going to sound like a horrific take, but this is the real world. There is no move to make.
No.
No, the NFL can't do anything. The Patriots can't do anything. This has to play out. There's no exempt list.
I mean, they could. I don't think they're going to. They haven't made that decision yet. They're meeting today with the first accuser and trying to get her side of the story, and maybe they do make a move based on that. I don't know. I don't know what they'll do, but they shouldn't. We've said that, like...
Well, the NFL shouldn't be in the business of making moves. The justice system is where this should play out. What do you think of this one? Ian Rappaport. Trust him? I guess beware? He's the one who had Antonio Brown going to the Bills over the summer. Wrong. He says the Patriots would not have signed AB if they knew about the lawsuit. That's not directly from Kraft, but those are Kraft's thoughts, supposedly, from Rappaport. Well, if that's the case, if Kraft felt so strongly about sort of being duped or sideswiped by this lawsuit, wouldn't Kraft be fired up enough to sit AB then? Well, not saying he should.
No, I think it would be cutting him. I don't think they're gonna have him on the roster and pay him and not play him. It's either cut him or just move on and say he's on your team. I mean, I think those are the options that you have: support him and keep him there and wait till it plays out and just let him play, or cut him. I don't think you can keep the rights to him and say, "Oh, we're just gonna keep him inactive for the rest of the season." First of all, it'd be a huge distraction in your locker room, and I just don't think you're gonna do that. So there's not a whole lot of options that they have outside of those things, and they're not going to cut him. They're going to keep playing him. That's what they do. And it's amazing to me that, I mean, obviously the Patriots fed this information and tried to get it out there, right, to say, hey, we would have never done this if we knew about this. You probably would have.
I'll say I believe the report, but I don't believe the source. Well, I don't believe that the report is essentially true. Like, they said it, but I think Kraft and especially Belichick still would have signed him.
Of course. And I'm what they would have done, I think, is used it for leverage in negotiating and paid him less money. I think they probably would have done that, but I don't think it would have kept him from signing him. Listen,
this is also...
I love Kraft on the high horse, too.
Well, that too. That's why this is so fascinating. Can you imagine Bob Kraft behind the scenes is like, what? Antonio Brown walks up to women naked and tries to get some?
Why doesn't he just pay them to massage him?
Bro, you're rotting up. I mean, I'll give you credit. It's like 4 minutes in and out. I can't believe it. For your guy your age, congrats.
Impressive.
It's like a 14-year-old.
Firing on all cylinders. Yeah. Impressive.
But his underlings, his subordinates are not going to laugh at Kraft, but, I mean, there's got to be a chuckle when he's all like, what? AB, I mean, the behavior's disgusting.
This is unacceptable. And everybody just kind of gives him the side eye like, oh, okay.
Really,
so,
Bobby?
If you say so, I guess. I mean, I don't know why. Well, no, you're sitting in judgment, but okay. Good enough.
All the way back, we got the 4 o'clock hour coming. Big 5 at 4. We'll get you ready for the Jets and the Browns. More on what's going on with the Raiders. And lots of weird officiating talk from around the National Football League.
Free parking and food specials starting at $4. Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch is the spot for Monday Night Football.